This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
That it is, and open lines on this segment where you guys are welcome to call in and share your thoughts on any of the cases that we are following. Ask questions, give your theories and insights. The phone number, if you want to do that, is 888-5-KILLER. That's 888-554-5537 to share all of that with us. Tony and Stacy with you. Let's jump into our call here and see what we got to take a listen to. As soon as I pull it up, I had it. There it is. Okay. I renamed it. It wouldn't open. Here we
go. Hey, Tony. This is Christy calling from LA. I just listened to your latest interview with Laura Yuretsian, which was great. And I thought she had some really great insight. But I had a couple of questions. One thought and one question. So my thought was, she was talking about the DNA at the scene in Idaho that Koberger is accused of. And she was saying that she thinks that unless there's more DNA of his left at the scene, then she thinks that that works in his favor, in the sense that all we know from the affidavit was that there was DNA on the knife sheath, but we don't know what else is there. Obviously, they don't tell us until the hearing in June. But she was saying something about, well, if we find out then that his DNA is all over the place and in other rooms and that kind of thing, then that's more damning for him. But I was kind of wondering, it feels kind of like the opposite could be true, because if his DNA is everywhere, that's a little bit more easy to say, oh yeah, I attended a party there. I was friendly with a couple of them, and maybe their friends didn't know or whatever, but like, yeah, I was over there once for a party, and maybe nobody remembers because everybody was drunk and there was a lot of people or whatever. I don't know, but I feel like because that was known as a party house, DNA being all over the place, it's much easier to explain, like, well, I've been there before. Like, what's the big deal? That's not a crime. But your DNA being nowhere except the murder weapon, well, the sheath of the murder weapon, to me, it's like, that's pretty difficult, because he obviously, we know from the survivor that he was wearing mask, and so we assume he was probably wearing gloves and all that kind of stuff. So I doubt he left any obvious DNA everywhere. I don't think it was like a super sloppy in terms of just like there being fingerprints and, you know, DNA everywhere. But if his DNA was just on the knife sheath, that almost looks more like it's someone trying to cover their tracks, but he probably had handled the knife at home prior going there and then had wiped it down as best he could and like missed, you know, didn't do it perfectly. And there was a little DNA left on the button of the clasp. So when he put gloves on to go into the crime scene, that was all that was really left as a remainder. That's my speculation. So just a thought there is, like, does more DNA that actually be damning? I kind of feel like the opposite is true. And I also had a question that your interview with her really, I thought was fascinating, from the sense of asking her questions from a defense attorney's perspective on how to handle a case if you start to believe your client is guilty. And I've always been curious, like, she said that if your client admits to you that you did it, that he did it, and then you put him on the stand and ask him questions and he lies and you know he's lying, that's a problem. And I don't know anything about the legal world. And I'm guessing a lot of your listeners are not lawyers. So I'd be really curious to know, from one of your defense attorney experts, if, does that mean then that we have to assume that like all of the high profile criminal cases out there where the public feels like it's pretty darn clear that the person did it, and I'm thinking like O.J. Simpson, Casey Anthony, Alex Murdaugh, like people that it seems really clear that they did it, but they are still to this day saying they didn't do it. And in the case of like O.J. Simpson, Casey Anthony, they were actually acquitted. Does that mean that they continue to tell their defense attorney that they didn't do it, because I always thought, but this is maybe just me being naive, I always thought that, like, a defendant, even if they know they did it, that with attorney-client privilege, they could tell their attorney, yes, I did it, but I really want you to help me get off on this charge. Is that crazy? Is that a silly thing for me to think? Is that not ethical? Are they not allowed to do that? If someone admits to their attorney, yes, I did murder this person, does the attorney then have to, like, recuse themselves? Or, like, what? I always thought that criminals, like, people that really did the bad thing could tell their attorney, and their attorney could help them craft a story around it. So I'm just curious what if there's any truth to that, or if I just have been being naive this whole time. Okay, thank you.
Well, I guess it kind of depends on the attorney you're using and their ethics, but yeah, you may have been being naive this whole time, because the attorneys cannot know of the guilt. You can't go and say, I murdered these five people and I want you to try and get me off. No, they can't do that.
One thing, though, I'm not going to go into great detail, but I know an attorney extremely well. What their role is to make sure that their client gets a fair and legal treatment during the court case and any punishment. They may know of guilt, but they need to make sure that their client is dealt with appropriately and legally, that they are afforded all of their rights, that they can have an attorney, obviously appointed to them, or they're paying one. Now, they can always plead not guilty. And I don't know enough about law to go into it. And
it's a gray area,
area.
But no, I mean, you could lose your license if you knew that someone was, if you truly knew that they were the killer, in something like that.
If you truly knew that they had done it. Now,
yeah, anyone can make assumptions, but the client can't go to you and say, I murdered these five people.
Right.
Let's craft a story that shows that it wasn't.
Precisely.
Attorneys can't go into court and lie. And I mean, people are like, oh yeah, bullshit. No, they can't. They can try and tell a story and try and present a situation that is plausible to be believed, but they can't intently make shit up that they know is truly not true or accurate to try and get someone off.
And that's the difference. You know, they can't be scheming with their client to fabricate a story that a jury will hear that's not accurate. They may know behind the scenes, shit, my client did this. But he's pleading not guilty. So let's just see if we can get him lesser charges. Can we get him exonerated?
No, it's to zealously defend your clients. And that's what it comes down to with criminal defense. And that's, exactly. That's what they do. They are zealously defending their clients. And that's their job. But they can't make shit up. That's if that's what you're wondering, where it's like, let's scheme and that's where
they cannot lie.
That's
period.
Where an attorney would go to jail as well.
And you know, the other thing is they can't offer up evidence that they know isn't real. So if, like you said, they can't just make something up and go, oh, how about this? It could be this. No, they can't be fabricating things. That's not ethical. Nope. Yes, they'll lose their license, especially, I mean, if they're caught, they'll never practice again.
Or go to jail. I mean, because that's also illegal. So, I mean, it would be one of the, I mean, and that's happened before where attorneys have, you know, they knew of the guilt and they found ways of covering things up with evidence that wasn't legit. And that is illegal to do. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how much you want to try and represent a client. There's a line there where you can't cross as well. So it's a fine line that they walk. What a hard job it truly is to do that and to be able to represent some of the people out there. But that's how our system works. And it's always very interesting to talk to people. I just had a conversation earlier, right before I talked to you, with a defense attorney who works with Mark Garagos. We were talking about the Daybell trial, and it was a great one because she's one of the best at this, and she kind of almost convinced me that, well, maybe there is a way Lori Daybell could actually get off on this case.
The attorneys, if they are so good at crafting stories, and, you know, everybody's got their own take on how, you know, how something went down. We all have our own take on 9/11. If we were alive then, we all had a different version.
Yep.
That's what an attorney does, takes a look at something and tells a story.
Yep. Very, very true. And it's very interesting. And the stories that I was being told, and you can hear it on one of the episodes, it's an episode with Alexandra, where we're talking about the Daybells here. It either airs today, I believe it airs today. And it's just very fascinating, the law that she cites to justify and truly paint a possible path for her, to be set free at some point, or to be found not guilty. And the path that she painted on that episode, I could understand it in some way, shape, or form. There's a lot of other things that argue against it that would likely not take that path, but it was very interesting to go down that road. So if you want to comment or give any feedback, thoughts on the cases we're following for you, you can do so. 888-554-5537, 888-5-KILLER. Is the phone number.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Love to hear your thoughts and feedback on the cases that we are following for you. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.